Whenever in that handoff between marketing, you know, passing a lead to sales, and if sales says that's, you know, that lead sucked, let's unpack like what it means for a lead to be like labeled as sucky. One possible reason that they're labeled as being sucky is that they did not check the boxes. They did not fit the criteria to begin with. But the other reason for the suck is that there's just no intent.
Turning strangers into happy customers is no small feat, but many companies put thousands of leads into the top of their funnel without a reliable process for identifying and nurturing truly sales-ready leads. If your team struggles with lead generation or conversion rates, today's tactical chat will give you the blueprint you need for executing a high-velocity, efficient pipeline factory.
Are you a startup founder or CMO trying to grow your brand? There's good news. You're not the first. Our growth team is committed to learning and earning the skills and strategies high-growth companies have used to build their businesses. And now, we're sharing them with you. Welcome to Growth Team Radio.
Welcome to Growth Team Radio. I'm your host, Mallory Kuhn, and I am joined today by Tyler, a growth strategist here at Lean Labs. Hi there, Tyler. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good, Mallory. How you doing?
Excellent. I am doing great. And for everyone out there today, Tyler and I are going to be talking about all things MQL. We're going to be talking about unlocking the power of well-qualified leads. So let's start basic, as we always do here, and then we'll kind of drill in to the details later in the episode. But, you know, with the baseline here, criteria is going to vary for every company, but what are some of the key ingredients or criteria that you look for when you're qualifying leads, when you're thinking MQLs?
So there's a few categories for qualifying an MQL, and I would say like the first and foundational category is, do they check the boxes of like demographics? And if you're selling B2B, then you add on that layer of firmographics. And demographics are really just like those filters. Like, are there specific ages or locations or job titles that you need to kind of check the box on to agree that that's a potential client for the company? And then do you need them to be, you know, a team member or a founder of a specific type of company as well? And so you'd have your checklist for the firmographics of, you know, industry type, business size, stage of revenue, number of employees, any of those type of metrics as well. And so those are like baseline, foundational. Do they have both of those? And if the answer is yes, great. And if the answer is no, then you can eliminate them as an MQL. But what they don't tell you is if there's any intent at all. You check the boxes of, yeah, that you know, they fit our criteria, but then we have to add on this extra layer of, did they do something that's like a signal to us that they're actually trying to solve a specific problem or trying to get a specific outcome or in the market for a specific type of solution? So we want to take a look at the behavior. Like, did they actually do something recently? Did they attend one of our online events or webinars lately? Were they, you know, just at a trade show that we were a sponsor of? Are they consuming content on our website? Just some sort of a signal, right? And then a part of that signal, or almost a third layer of that criteria for the MQL, is, did they engage with anything lately? Like, have they been snooping us on social media? Did they leave a comment on our post? Did they send us a private message? Did they send us a reply to that last newsletter email? Like, have we heard from them in any way and on any platform? And it's, you got to layer those two main buckets of criteria. Did they check the boxes of the demographics and the firmographics? And then did they do something that signals intent? And have we heard from them in any way? And so, if the answer is yes to those, then I think, okay, yeah, that's probably, you know, you get to say this is an MQL, and have some confidence that a conversation or a next step with that person is not going to be a waste of time.
That, I think that's super valuable, and I think especially that second piece, right? Like, have they shown intent? Have they taken action? I think that's a piece that's missing a lot of times when we think about leads, right? Like oftentimes we're like, oh, yeah, they're, you know, part of this industry and they, you know, their company has this much revenue, whatever. They're great. But if they aren't showing that intent, maybe they are not quite ready to speak with sales. So I feel like that's, you know, one of the reasons why MQLs matter to make sure that we're not wasting time. But can you speak a little bit more to how qualifying leads really helps the sales funnel?
Yeah, and I think to answer that question, if we flip it and ask the question, like, what would make somebody a poor use of time to try to chase them down? Like, if you've ever like done outbound or reached out to people or tried to follow up with somebody who did not check all those boxes, then you know all the pains that happen when you do it that way. You know that it's going to take you like a very long time to get a response from them. You know that the sales cycle is going to be long or non-existent. There's going to be a low conversion rate or no conversion rate. It's going to be a lot of effort to follow up. It's going to be frustrating for the sales team. So like these are all of the pain points that show up in the absence of a really clearly defined MQL or when you're spending the time on somebody that does not check the boxes of an MQL. So that's why being able to like define and flag the intent or flag the signal that occurs that tells you somebody is actually, you know, is open to learning about what it is that you've got and how you can help them and learning about your solution. If you're chasing after people that don't fit that criteria, then, you know, it just becomes frustrating and expensive for everyone involved. So those, avoiding those pain points is the argument for having marketing be very focused on generating MQLs with a very specific definition and criteria for those MQLs. And again, because it'll shorten the sales cycle, it'll make it easier to follow up with them, it'll help protect the sales team's time, you'll get higher conversion rates, and across the board, everybody's happier.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Avoiding pain and making everyone happier across the board, I'm in. Yeah. So we know why it's important and what benefits we can reap, if you will, if we're really nailing qualifying our leads, at the MQL stage. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen companies make when they're trying to define those categories or to identify those leads? Where are people kind of getting this wrong and not getting those benefits?
So when it comes to like defining an MQL, I think the mistakes that somebody is likely to make does depend on the stage of business. The earlier stage businesses, I find, often have this attitude that, like, we just need to get traction, so we'll sell to anyone. Like, we can help everyone, kind of an attitude. And so there, which is not necessarily wrong, but it's not a stage you want to stay in. Like, if you're going through kind of a trial and error stage where you're figuring out who the best clients are and because you're not quite sure yet, then it makes sense to, like, you know, do a bit of testing, like see if you can get traction in one vertical. And if you can't, maybe you make the decision to move on and try to get traction in another vertical. But as soon as you've like tested a few and found where you got some traction, that's where like trying to serve multiple verticals at the same time is like no longer a strength. Like now you're taking focus away from the one where you could have got traction. And I know Kevin has said this in a lot of our content. He says, like, focus on one ICP, one market until you get to at least $1 million in revenue before you even consider another whole segment, or you're just spreading resources like super, super thin and spreading focus thin. So for the earlier stage businesses, that's a mistake, is spending like too long trying to serve different segments and not making the choice to just double down on one. And then you could possibly serve more later, but the willingness to double down on one, I feel, is very important. And then for businesses that are more established and are a bit further along, they often have several ICPs, and they've not been willing to make make the decision of like, well, those ones actually were not our best fit. And they're not willing to prune any of the verticals or any of the segments that they serve for the sake of giving, of getting even more growth and even more traction with the ones that are already proven. And so they might actually have too many different ICPs. You know, we got an ICP for 5, 6, 7 segments, but for the stage of business they're in, it still might have made sense for them to only focus on one or two. Another mistake that I've seen, and this would be for the businesses that have been around for a little while, is that nobody's touched the ICP in a while. Nobody's like looked at it. You know, they did a whole customer profile development or ideal client profile. At some point in the past, it was done in like a marketing meeting or whatever, where everybody decided upon what the ICP was. And then it's like nobody touched it for a couple of years, and nobody went back and updated it based on new findings or changes in the market or the problems that might have evolved with the clients that they're serving. Like, they didn't treat it as a living and breathing document that is meant to be updated. And so if you've got a clearly defined customer profile and clearly defined criteria for an MQL, but nobody has actually updated that thing in a while, then I feel like a good like rhythm for at least checking on it and seeing if anything has changed is probably at least every quarter, and definitely like worst case scenario every year, like quick check in. At the very least every year, but quarterly would be ideal. And it doesn't mean that you're pivoting. It doesn't mean you're changing your MQLs. You're just keeping it up to date.
Yeah.
Something I do on ideal customer profile worksheets is I have a spot where we keep links to like some of our favorite clients, and so that they're always there as examples. Like as the ICP is getting updated, so too are the examples of the most recent clients that represent that ICP. And so it's not just theoretical. It's like, this is our criteria, and these are the actual people and companies that fit this criteria that we've gotten great results for, and we want more clients like that. And keeping that up to date is very important.
Yeah, I think that's a great point about making sure you're revisiting that, especially, you know, a lot of our clients are in the, you know, tech and SaaS space. Things are evolving pretty rapidly a lot of times in those markets. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to completely throw out, you know, everything about your ICP, but it's good to keep an eye on it and make sure that you've got your finger on the pulse of what's going on there. What about the definition of the criteria that you're using to qualify your leads? Obviously, like if your ICP it changes, your MQL criteria will change as well. But are there any other reasons, changes, times that you should be revisiting your definition of an MQL?
I mean, if you make any significant changes to your primary offer, your primary solution, or you come up with like new products or new solutions and you're about to like launch something new, then it's worth like checking to see, does this solution we're developing for this specific problem justify a change in how we define an MQL or our ideal client? And in some cases, you might be developing an offer to help create the qualified client for another offer. I've heard some marketers refer to this as like kind of like offer stacking. Like, you might have your core offer that's your main source of revenue for your business, and you've got some pretty strict criteria for who's an ideal client for that offer. And that becomes a ceiling on your growth, because not every prospect is going to check all the boxes of having all the criteria. This is like especially true in the world of agencies, where for an agency to be able to get a great result for a client, there's some things the client has to bring to the table too. And if they fall short on any of those things, it's either the options are generally like, let's take them on as a client and like try to compensate for those gaps, or let's part ways and like not take them on because they didn't check all the boxes. So what I do see some companies do is develop kind of a front end offer so that we're working with that client to help them get the things in place that we wanted them to have to qualify for the core offer. And so in that case, how you define your MQL might change, because now you're helping somebody that's a little bit earlier stage in their journey of solving that bigger problem, and you're helping them get ready to become a client. And so yeah, just if somebody's making a change to an offer, if they're developing a front end offer to help create clients for a back end offer or a core offer, I feel like that's a good time to check in and see if you can maybe remove some of the criteria from an MQL, because you actually have an offer now that helps somebody get that criteria in place.
Absolutely. So we touched on getting good leads to sales earlier, and we don't want to waste people's time. we talk about sales marketing alignment quite a bit on this show, and obviously MQL episode is, we have to talk about it. Right. Yeah. There's always ongoing, I'm going to say jokes with heavy air quotes, because they aren't jokes. when salespeople are talking about how much their leads from marketing suck, right? Oh, God. Yeah. Well, stop passing us leads that suck, right? That's, you know, it's a thing that we hear over and over and over again in many industries, and jokes and all kinds of things across all of business, really. How can companies ensure that their sales team is finding value in the MQLs that marketing is passing along? And just kind of, if you could walk me through an ideal handoff process, right? Like, how do we make this better?
Yeah. No, this is, they did not check the boxes. They did not fit the criteria. Like, they were not the right demographic or firmographic at all. And so that's kind of a mistake of marketing. They shouldn't have even handed that person to sales to begin with. But the other reason for the suck is that there's just no intent. Like the thing that made them a lead did not like produce any intent for them to solve a problem. And I find that this is particularly common with a lot of educational type lead magnets. Remember, like 8-10 years ago when I first got into this space, most lead magnets were just like guides, right? Like PDF guides, books, you know, long books even.
Oh yeah, white papers,
and right? All white that. Papers and stuff. These were like educational content that taught somebody about how to solve the problem, or how, you know, or about the solution itself. And we would run campaigns, and we'd build landing pages, and we'd give away these educational guides. And then people would download the guides. And if you actually check in on those people, and you're trying to gauge intent, they'd be like, I'm just learning.
Yeah.
That was like 90-95% of the so-called leads.
Right.
Like that was their response. It's like, no, I'm just learning. Thank you so much.
Yep.
You know, thanks for the resource. Maybe I'll talk to you in 6 months. Right. That was kind of the typical response you get. And then I think what has shifted over the last few years as well is there's been a real like commoditization of educational content, particularly because so much of it is generated by AI, or at least like the process of creating content is more efficient now because of AI. So there's more of it. There is more educational content now. And so a good lead magnet doesn't just have like information in it that could have existed as a blog post, or could have been a YouTube video, or could have been a response to a question somebody asks in ChatGPT. Like if the lead magnet that generated the lead is just informational only, then you're going to get a bunch of people that you just ask them for their contact information to give them information that they could have gotten without giving you contact information. And their intent was probably just to learn. So I say all that to circle back to your question of the best handoff from marketing to sales is the handoff of somebody who has done something to show that they're actively trying to solve the problem. And if marketing actually helped them solve a small problem that made them more qualified to talk to sales, that's how you frame the handoff. The handoff could be like, hey, you know, so-and-so from sales, I just, you know, I'm introducing you to John here. John just went through one of our trainings on how to price his, you know, on how to come up with the pricing for his new software that he's creating. He's picked his price, and now he's interested in learning about how we could help him, you know, build his free trial sign up page or whatever. It's like, now it's like the handoff has the context that the lead was actively making progress towards a desired outcome. We helped them with a part of that journey. And in helping them with a part of that journey, we've created a gap where now there's something next that they have to tackle next. And so if you can frame the handoff as, hey, they just did this, and now because they did that, they're wondering about how to do this other thing. Can you have a conversation with them? And then that's a good handoff, because that's not somebody who's just got the intent to learn more.
Right.
They've got the intent to get help. And those are the people we want as our clients, is the people who want help. And it's our software, it's our services, it's our solution, our product that they are going to utilize in the implementation of getting that bigger outcome that they want, or getting that result that they want. So I know it's kind of a long-winded response, but does that help answer the question of what makes a good handoff? I think it's handing off somebody that has intent, who is actively like doing something to get their desired result, not just in learning mode and might come back 6 months from now when they've done a little more research.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's a great answer, a great context that you've given, because it gives us a few things, right? The key to a good handoff is making sure that the person that you're handing off is actually ready to be handed off. Also, the being able to describe to sales where the person's come from and what they're looking to do next gives them a really helpful context to make sure that first conversation is going to be valuable and meet the lead where they're at.
Yep.
And I think that the context you've given about the lead magnets is valuable as well there. That's, I think, a piece that a lot of people miss when they're creating that lead magnet. They could create the most beautiful piece of educational content, the greatest ebook ever to exist in PDF mm-hmm. format. But if it doesn't lead to a gap, what is it? Again, let's quote our fearless leader, Kevin, right? We want to leave them hungry, not full. If you just give them an ebook that fills them up completely and satisfies all the need they could ever need, well, what do they, need us for?
A great lead magnet is definitely can be thought of as an appetizer.
Yep.
Yeah, and then your main product is the meal, right? Is the full meal, but the appetizer has to. You actually help. You show somebody that you can help them by actually helping them. Like, you show them that you've got good food on the menu by letting them sample some of it.
Right.
Right.
They know they can trust your kitchens.
Yeah.
They'll come back for more.
Well, and when the free resource or the training or the lead magnet, whatever it was that actually got the MQL in the first place, when it actually helped them do something rather than just informed them, that's like a significant difference in the amount of trust that you've built with that person. Because they can get education from pretty much anywhere, but they can't get help with a specific problem from everywhere. So you've significantly added value to them before asking for any money in exchange. So when you do introduce them to the salesperson who's going to find out if there's the opportunity to support them in a bigger way and on a more long-term basis, they show up to that meeting already grateful that you helped them with something small, and now you're there to see if you can help them solve the next problem that they're trying to tackle now.
Right. They did this for me for free. Now, imagine what I can get when I'm, going to be paying them. So I think that we've covered some really great ground about the criteria that we set, the ways we can make sure we're qualifying leads well and handing off the right people to sales at the right time. But it's more than just knowing from a wishy-washy, I feel good in my belly feeling that we're sending off the right people. We need to talk numbers, right? We need to know the metrics, right? How do we know, aside from just talking to sales and getting anecdotal data about whether or not the leads we're handing off are good? How can we monitor the quality of our MQLs at scale?
Yeah, so I think a good number to start with, and it's a little bit mind-blowing to me how many marketers I've met and I've spoken to who are flying kind of blind with these numbers. Like they've not been given like a guiding number that's what represents like an acceptable metric or cost to generate a lead. And so the starting point before you can really hone in on the metrics that tell you if you're generating MQLs at the right benchmarks is first deciding, well, how much money is willing to be traded to get the client in the first place? Like what's the desired client acquisition cost? Right. Start with that. And then once you've got that number, you take that number and you divide it by the win rate on the sales calls and in the sales meetings. And then now you've arrived at an acceptable cost of a qualified meeting with sales. And then you take that number and you hand it over to marketing and you say, your job is to help like book meetings. And this is the most we want to spend to generate a meeting. Okay, so that becomes their North Star, right? Marketing's job is generally not to close the deal, it's to book the meetings, right? And that kind of the buck stops there. But there's the like the transfer of the metric that has had to have start where somebody decided at the higher up in the company what we can spend to get our clients here. And then now that that number is trickling over to marketing, we've got a desired like cost of a booked meeting as our metric. And then we want to have a minimum benchmark for a conversion rate from MQL to book meeting, right? And you might have heard the stat that like in any given market, about 3% are looking for a solution now. I think this was comes from Chet Holmes' demand generation pyramid. He talked about it in his book, where at any market, any industry, you got about 3% that are ready to buy now, and you've got about 7% that are open to it, but they need some convincing. So I've taken that as like a standard benchmark for any business that does not yet have their own numbers or their own like conversion metrics to report on, and say they're marketing to a new vertical or a new segment, or they just developed a new lead magnet. Let's start with the benchmarks. So we should be aiming for like a bare minimum 3% of the MQLs book in a meeting. And if it's below that, that's like a red flag. Something's off. That wasn't the right market for us, or that wasn't the right lead magnet for that market. We want at least 3%. And then above 3, like between 3 and 10 is like pretty good. And then anything above 10 is like you got a bit of a home run there. Right. Like that's a really good lead magnet if at least 10% of the people who grabbed it are moving on to book in a meeting. So I would have those as kind of benchmarks. And then those are the numbers you look at, is you monitor what percentage of the MQLs become SQLs and at what cost. And it's easiest to measure the cost with paid ad campaigns, because it's more straightforward. You're trading dollars to send people to landing pages and then they're opting in and you see the cost. Right. Of lead. It's a little bit messier to arrive at that number when the traffic comes from other sources, but at least you have kind of a guiding target, right? And then attributing, if you've got multiple traffic sources, being able to dig in and report on like which traffic sources brought the leads. And if you could actually isolate the conversion rates and the costs for each lead by source, and then also the speed at which they moved from MQL to SQL, then you've got some really good visibility on what's working and what's not working. So to kind of summarize all that, because again, I know that was kind of long-winded, but metrics we want to look at are the actual conversion rate from MQL to a booked meeting, the cost to get somebody from MQL to a booked meeting, the cost by source, and conversion rate by source, and the speed at which they converted to a booked meeting.
Absolutely. So I feel like this kind of dovetails into my next question a little bit, because I think that the metrics are obviously going to be one of the clearest signs. But what are some of the signs that you might be not necessarily even using the wrong lead magnets or using the wrong criteria or, you know, whatever, but that you might be messing up the timing, right? Like if you're qualifying a lead a little too early, you know, you mentioned there's the 3% that are ready to go now versus 7% that might need a little more TLC before they're really ready to kind of pull the trigger. Are there any kind of hallmarks that might show that you're maybe jumping the gun or dragging your feet?
Yeah, there's a couple of signs that tell you that like somebody's the lead magnet or whatever resource was used to generate the MQL just isn't really doing an effective job. If you've got like low engagement on however you tried to promote that thing to begin with, if you tried to promote that lead magnet with social posts or an email or an ad campaign and it's not really getting traction, that's a red flag. If people are opting in for the resource, but they're not even using it, like then there's a disconnect there where there's a low engagement rate on the actual resource itself, meaning that maybe you might have overpromised and then underdelivered, or there's a disconnect between what you said it was and what they got, and then they drop, and then they
unclear how to use it, right? Like we'll see that a lot where when you offer free trials, right, or freemium models, you get people that are like, oh yeah, let me try it, and then if they're not clear how to use it, leader up right off. So yeah, okay.
Another thing to consider is like, did your lead magnet actually solve like the right problem? Like, did you solve a problem that if somebody has that problem, that's a good sign that they're very close to becoming a client or very close to being ready to buy? Because you might have thought of a great lead magnet that solves a great problem, but it's like nowhere near close to what somebody would be going through or dealing with, when they're most likely to say yes to your main solution. So there might be a disconnect there, and that the lead magnet itself got traction. The landing page has a good conversion rate. The cost of a lead looked low, but it's just the context was wrong. Like the thing that you're helping them with doesn't actually bring them any closer to becoming a client. So the vanity metrics look good, but the intent to buy isn't there. So those are some of the red flags I would watch out for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those vanity metrics, man, they'll get you. Very important to watch out for those. Awesome. Well, we've gotten some great information, some incredible insights from you this episode so far. So to kind of close out here, do you have any resources that you'd recommend for our listeners who are looking to dive a little deeper into MQLs and just, you know, improve their lead qualification processes?
The book by Chet Holmes, that's a good one. It's a bit of an older one, but it's got some like timeless principles in it. And then for some more like recent kind of tactical stuff, I've been a part of Dave Gerhardt's Exit 5 community for a couple of years. We learned a lot of good stuff from there. So anybody who's in B2B marketing, even founders as well, like there's plenty of value in that community. So I would point people in that direction too as a good resource.
Excellent. Very good advice. So yeah, check out Chet Holmes' book and check out Dave Gerhardt's Exit 5 group. I agree. Those are great resources. So that kind of wraps us up here. Thank you so much, Tyler, for chatting with me about all things MQLs.
No problem. This was fun.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Hopefully our listeners are going to be able to use these insights and improve their lead qualification and nurturing processes and start reaping the benefits of those well-qualified leads. So thank you everybody out there for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you have 2 minutes, 1 minute, take a second to rate and review the show on your podcast application of choice. Until next time, this has been Growth Team Radio.
Want to grow your business? You're trying to find the right path to do it? Well, we've got the answers. Go to stopscaling.com. Yes, you heard right. Go to stopscaling.com, where we'll show you the exact way to grow your business this year.